3, 2, 1.
What will the world look like 10 or 20 years from now? The Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a peek. And we can't wait to show you what's coming. Subscribe now.
Economic growth is slowing in China. What it means for the global economy.
It's really zigging while everyone else is zagging, if you like. China inflation is low and the central bank is easing. The economy is slowing down at a time when in other countries the economies are going a little bit faster.
And why the price of oil fell on China's data. Plus, why you might want to check your facts if you got them from TikTok. It's Monday, August 15th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Oil prices fell today on the prospect of more supply from Saudi Arabia and less demand from China. The world's largest oil exporter, Saudi Arabia's Aramco, announced over the weekend that it's on track to expand oil output by 1 million barrels a day by the year 2027. That would bring its total crude production to 13 million barrels a day. Meanwhile, the largest customer for oil, China, released new data today showing that its economy is slowing. That's fueling concerns about weaker demand. China consumes about 15% of the world's oil and imports more crude than any other. Brent crude, the global benchmark, was down 3.11% today to $95.10 a barrel. Later in the show, we'll talk more about what's behind slowing growth in China. We report exclusively that the Biden administration has decided not to release some $7 billion in foreign assets held by Afghanistan's central bank in the U.S. after a U.S. drone strike killed al-Qaeda's leader in Kabul. That's according to U.S. officials. The leader was living next to a guest house of the Taliban's powerful Minister of Interior. The administration had previously said it was considering releasing half of the money to help the Afghan people and setting aside the other half for relatives of the victims of the September 11th attacks. But our reporter Jessica Donati says plans have now changed amid concerns about a resurgence of global terrorism in Afghanistan, which is now under the control of the Taliban.
The strike that killed the leader of al-Qaeda in central Kabul showed that really the Taliban are still very close to al-Qaeda, and there are a number of sanctioned officials in the central bank who have al-Qaeda links, which of course increases concerns that money released to the central bank could be used for terrorism. And on the other side, many economists have said that using this money for humanitarian aid is not a good idea, because if you spend it all on aid, on basic food and things like that, you won't have any money left for operations to stabilize the economy, and that money disappears from the central bank's reserves. So it is wiser in the long term to hold on to it until the central bank is able to use it.
A White House spokesperson says the government is involved in long-term talks with other nations with the goal of establishing a fund to manage the reserves for the Afghan people. Rudy Giuliani has been named a target of an investigation in Fulton County, Georgia, into efforts by then-President Donald Trump and his supporters to overturn the 2020 election in the state. That's according to one of Giuliani's lawyers, Robert Costello. Giuliani was subpoenaed in the probe earlier this summer. Separately, a federal judge in the state has declined to block a subpoena issued to South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham in the investigation, meaning he must testify to a special grand jury. Graham's office says he plans to appeal. He is among a number of Trump allies who have been subpoenaed in the Fulton County probe in recent weeks. Activist investor Dan Loeb's hedge fund Third Point has bought a significant stake in Disney. In a letter to CEO Bob Chapek, the hedge fund manager is pushing Disney to cut costs and shake up its portfolio. That includes buying up Comcast's minority stake in streaming giant Hulu, spinning off ESPN, and refreshing its board. In response to Third Point's letter, Disney said it welcomes the views of all of its investors. And the UK has become the first country to approve Moderna's new Omicron-targeting COVID-19 vaccine as a booster shot. It's a so-called bivalent vaccine, meaning it targets both the original strain of the virus and the Omicron variant known as BA1. An exploratory analysis found that the bivalent vaccine also generated a good immune response against variants BA4 and 5. The UK's Vaccine Strategy Committee said it will recommend the booster alongside some others for a fall campaign aimed at adults 50 and older, healthcare workers, and people with weakened immune systems. Coming up, China's economy stumbled in July, prompting the central bank to cut two key interest rates. What that could mean for China's recovery and the global economy after the break.
What then will the future reveal?
There's one thing we know about the future. It's being built now.
We all have a stake in the future.
The future.
The future.
The future.
And the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a glimpse of what's on the way. I'm Danny Lewis. Join us as we dig into how science and technology are shaping the future.
For that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
China, the world's second largest economy, is struggling to emerge from the pandemic. The country saw a temporary two-month boost after emerging from strict zero-COVID lockdowns. But a raft of data released today shows activity slowing across China's economy, from investments to real estate, factory output to consumer spending. In response, the country's central bank cut two key interest rates. That could have huge impacts not just on China, but here in the U.S. and around the globe as well. Joining me now with more from Singapore is Wall Street Journal reporter Jason Douglas. Hi, Jason. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, Jason, how unexpected was today's decision? How unusual is it for China to cut rates like this?
It's a little bit unexpected. The central bank has trimmed rates a little bit over the past few months whenever the economy has wobbled a bit. But officials have kind of signaled that they don't want to do the kind of full-scale easing that other countries did during the depths of the pandemic, mostly for reasons around financial stability and little of the worry about inflation as well. Having said all that, there was some pretty weak credit data out of China over the weekend, and I think that had kind of teed up some sort of action by the central bank, so it wasn't a total surprise.
China right now is facing broad-based challenges hitting a large swath of the country's economy. Can you give us a sense of what we're seeing here across the board?
So if you remember, what happened was China had some lockdowns earlier in the year, and then it reopened starting May and more fully in June. And so what we saw was kind of a big bounce back in May and June as everyone went back to work and factories reopened and all the supply chain kinks that were causing such problems were kind of ironed out. What we're seeing today in the data from July is that has stopped, right? I mean, that effect is basically faded now, and the kind of underlying problems in the Chinese economy are surfacing again. So what we saw was a slowdown in growth in retail sales, a slowdown in growth in industrial production, some very gloomy news out of the property sector, which is a big problem for the Chinese economy right now, and another slowdown in growth in investment, which is important because the government is trying to juice the economy a little bit by investing in infrastructure. We also got some new data on the labor market in China. And while overall unemployment ticked down a little bit, we saw another rise in youth unemployment. So this is people aged 16 to 24, big chunk of the Chinese workforce, and unemployment there is reaching 20%. So that's pretty bad. That's certainly the highest we have on record. All these things add up to pretty gloomy picture for Chinese consumers, right? They have the threat of renewed COVID lockdowns hanging over their heads as long as the government sticks with their zero COVID policy. They have a sinking property market that isn't going to make anyone feel particularly wealthy. And they have sort of growing gloom from overseas as well as other parts of the world start to slow down. So consumer confidence in China is at a low ebb and doesn't really seem like there's going to be much that will give people a lift anytime soon.
Now, much of the world is struggling to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. What challenges is China sharing with other global economies and which are unique to China?
I think China is in a pretty unusual position, right? If we think about the rest of the world, most economies have recovered from COVID. They've vaccinated everybody and they've reopened to a greater or lesser extent. In fact, there only really are a few economies where you still have any strict restrictions, China being one of them. And the problem in most of the world is that inflation is picking up and central banks are having to raise rates to bring it back down. China just is in a totally different position. It's really zigging while everyone else is zagging, if you like. China inflation is low and the central bank is easing. The economy is slowing down at a time when in other countries the economies are going a little bit faster. And we are, of course, now starting to see the effects of the war in Ukraine and the interest rate rises and high inflation starting to take a toll on growth in Europe and the US as well. So in that sense, China kind of is part of this big global slowdown. But from a kind of policy perspective, it's in a different place entirely.
What role might geopolitics play here? We know tensions are rising between China and Taiwan, with China demonstrating that it could blockade the island. What role might China's military posturing play on its economic recovery?
It's hard to see how it's going to help. I mean, if one of the headwinds to Chinese growth is, you know, the repeated disagreements with the United States over everything from trade policy to intellectual property, those kind of tensions aren't going to be eased by the situation around Taiwan anytime soon. So it doesn't help, and if anything, probably adds to some of those kind of short to medium term headwinds for the economy.
China is the world's second largest economy. Jason, to what extent do the struggles we're seeing there reflect what we might see eventually in Europe and the US?
China is really kind of entering this slow growth phase, if you like. A lot of it is more to do with the big structural problems in China's economy than necessarily the pandemic and the war in Ukraine, to the same extent that those things are affecting other parts of the world, if you like, if you see what I'm getting at. So the US is slowing because interest rates are having to go up pretty fast to bring down inflation in an economy that is overheating. Europe has a different set of problems, which is that it's been hit really hard by the war in Ukraine, and in particular the squeeze on natural gas supplies from Russia, which is pushing up prices at a time when the economy hadn't really recovered. And so it's heading for something that we might call stagflation. China, as we were talking about, is kind of in this slightly different position. It's struggling with just a whole bunch of big challenges that other countries don't necessarily share. The most obvious one being this big slump in its property sector, which has been a driver of Chinese growth for so long. And it's really, only all the sort of excesses there are really kind of coming home to roost, if you like. And it's going to be a big drag on the economy, even if you ditched the COVID policy tomorrow.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Jason Douglas. Jason, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And finally, how do I keep my avocado from getting too ripe? How should I treat my headache? What's going on in Ukraine? In the past, you might have asked Jeeves or Googled those questions. But a new survey by Google found that 40% of 18 to 24-year-olds are turning to TikTok for answers instead. In 2021, the Pew Research Center found that 22% of TikTok users relied on the app for their news. While inaccuracies can be found all over the internet, TikTok doesn't weigh its search results on reliability. The company says it assesses flagged content or videos with sensitive keywords using publicly available information, or information it received from its fact-checking partners. But our personal tech reporter Cordelia James says TikTok's design could also exacerbate the problem.
So TikTok's algorithm gives you information based on your interests and what videos are like the most popular at the time. When it comes to those kinds of videos, they don't necessarily always have to come from reliable sources. So if you're using the app to search for information such as, let's say, health advice, but you're not really getting it from an actual nutritionist, then you might be using some of these skills and tips from someone that might actually do you more harm than good. So you want to make sure that you're going off platform to do a little extra research to make sure you're getting information from an accurate and trusted source.
And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.